Hey folks, Tyler from Being This Person here. This is a conversation with someone I met professionally and now know as a friend. It was kind of our first conversation outside of a professional atmosphere, so it was kind of neat getting to know her. She does have a really interesting recent history, which we'll hear about, just, you know, no spoilers and all. But you'll some things come out about what she's been through. I would encourage you to subscribe, rate, and review, as well as tell a friend. The subscribe, rate, and review helps us on the internet. People can find us, and when there's good reviews, they think, hey, maybe I'll listen to this. But telling a friend really is what works best, because maybe even have a friend who doesn't know what podcasts are. Please show them. It's quite a thing. We do have an email. It is being this person, all lowercase letters, no spaces, at gmail.com. We are on Facebook as being this person. We have a website. It is beingthisperson.com. We also have a Twitter. Well, I have a Twitter. It's Donis Tyler, DONESTYLER, capitalized the D and the T in that. I'm getting a little better at it. It's occasionally I have some fun with it, and the rest of the time I just kind of stare at it and try to figure out what the hell is going on. But it is what it is. At that point, folks, thank you very much for listening, and let's roll the theme music. First question is, who are you?
My name is Eva.
And?
I'm human.
Most people are, not all of them.
Not all of them, no, not all of them. I unfortunately have to claim to be human. I don't know, what else would you like to know besides my name?
I mean, frankly, this is kind of a podcast of whatever you want to say, but a lot of people lead with, you're a parent.
I am.
I've had a number of people name kind of that mother, maiden, crone thing. Like, I've been a daughter, I've been a mother, I've been, you know, I don't know if you are a grandparent, but you're at the age similar to mine where it's coming soon, probably, you know?
It is coming soon, but thankfully I'm not. I don't like breeding because there's a lot of homeless, starving children all over the world, so I'm not a fan of breeders. I do have two children. My daughter is trying to procreate right now with her spouse, so it'll happen. And with any luck, my son will not procreate.
So are both your kids genetically yours then?
They are both
okay,
mine,
so you did
yes.
not adopt.
I did not adopt, okay. And I raised
but
them.
But you stopped at two, so by my opinion, congratulations. Job well done.
I would have stopped at one, but my ex-husband insisted, and he kept pushing and pushing, and I thought that would make him a better person, because I was young.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Those relationships.
It was one of those, and that ended quite well. So I raised both of my kids all by myself.
Wait, we went from those relationships to that ended quite well? That doesn't happen.
Well, I never had to see him again. That is ending quite well, in my opinion.
Okay. I have one of those. That has ended quite well if you judge it by those standards.
I do, yeah. By that standard, it did end
I probably
quite
never
well.
Have to see her again.
I learned a lot from that relationship. I learned I needed to be a stronger person. I learned you can't expect anybody to change. They are who they are, and that's just who they are. And I learned a lot. I'm very grateful for that relationship. It was a horrible relationship, but I'm incredibly grateful for it. So it paved the path that I'm on now, and I like my future better than my past. So, no regrets.
So what's the path you're on now, then? Can you paraphrase that? I know that's a giant question, but so is the question, who are you?
Who I am? Well, I'm trying to work with less with people and more with animals, because that's just my happy place, so I'm
Are admittedly more predictable.
Yeah,
even exactly. When they're unpredictable. Like, Siegfried and Roy can prove to you that they're unpredictable, but even then, probably better success with the animals.
Well, regardless of unpredictable, the end result is still typically more desirable than the end result with the human factor, so... I find a lot of peace working with animals, so I'm trying to work more with horses and less with people. And although contrary to that statement that I don't like people, I absolutely love the military. So I do as much as I can for my military unit and education, research. I volunteer as much as I can to do additional duties. I think what I like about it is the structure, and it's very black and white. If there's a rule... Everybody has to follow the same rule. There's not favoritism. There can't be. So if somebody's favorite person broke a rule, they still have the same punishment that their not favorite person gets.
Unless you're Ollie North.
Well, of course there's exceptions because there's humans involved.
Right. Anytime well, there's humans and involved. There's something my friend has taught me to use in words is that there's always an exception that proves the rule.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So there's, of course, exceptions.
And there's rules for reasons. And so they didn't get created out of nothing. But the military follows the rules better than the civilian world. And the expectations are laid out in black and white. What they expect from you is you know what they expect. You know what goals you have to meet. And they give you all the right tools to meet those goals. So...
May I poke at this a little bit?
Of course, yeah.
So, I agree with you. And that is, by definition, since the dawn of military as we know it. Like, mm-hmm. organized militant forces that serve one greater leadership. Even prior to the Roman forces. But definitely into the Roman forces and into the Huns and people of that nature. They had a strict set of rules, a codex or a code, if you mm-hmm. would, that they lived by. But I find that there are times that it comes to people's detriment. I was listening to this story that I watch. I don't know. I saw this or heard this thing about this Japanese war hero who entered World War II, ended up on the Philippines, which was a huge to-do in World War II, who gets the Philippines. Uh-huh. And as a Japanese man, he had been taught by the military, you don't give up. And they, the Eastern countries, tend to be even more don't give up than... Western countries still teach don't give up.
For different reasons, though.
Right. And Eastern countries tend to go, like, if you are going to get caught, kill yourself is kind of their rule. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole different, like, there's a line. It's a cultural difference. It's neither right nor wrong. But what ended up happening is their base got attacked, and he and a handful of people ran into the woods. He lived in the woods for 50 or more years. Of the Philippines. And they'd flyer bomb the place saying, come out, buddy. War's over. And because he had that military don't give up, the Japanese never would have surrendered. This is all lies. Training so deeply instilled in him.
Yeah.
He never came out until, you know, like I said, 50, 60 years later, ended up living in solitude in Argentina or some shit like every good war hero.
And like you mentioned, cultural differences.
Right.
That's...
But I do think that the overtraining isn't always healthy. It's definitely what a lot of people need. It's definitely what a lot of people need.
And there's also definitely what a lot of people don't need. There are people that should never be exposed to it because they don't have the right strands in their DNA or something.
Of the theory behind boot camp, though? Is to weed that out to some extent?
Yes, but they do a very poor job of it. Very, very poor job of it. I feel like from my personal experience, not from sitting back watching other things, but from my own personal experience, I feel like they need to do more stringent psychological testing before they even get to the boot camp stage. Because there are thousands upon thousands of mentally disabled veterans now that are claiming government disability and getting thousands of dollars a month tax-free out of your pocket. That never should have been in the military in the first place because they already were batshit crazy before they joined.
They were damaged before they went under
fire. Correct. Yes. But now all of a sudden it's the military's fault that they're damaged just because it looks good on paper and they get money out of it. There's people, I've actually heard people in my own boot camp say that they planned on collecting mental disability. and that that's why they joined the military.
Like, unabashedly out loud?
Yes. Yeah, it's a thing. And with the last politician that was in office, that was encouraged. I have friends who are just begging
for them to fucking pay for their dumb college finally. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I waited 10 years after getting out to go to college. Come on, man. Own your own side. So, like, the other side happens, too.
Yeah. And the people like that, though, are draining funds for legitimately disabled veterans that have tons and tons of mostly physical problems and some mental problems, but they're not getting the funding they need because all the funding is going to these kids that basically are taught at a young age, hey, join the military, you'll get disability.
You'll come out with PTSD and, yeah, and you'll just draw Social Security.
Yeah. At my last job before the most recent one, there was a guy that had retired from the Army. There was nothing wrong with him. He was sane and healthy, but he was claiming disability for a back problem that he'd gained during some bench presses he did at a private gym on private time. Had nothing to do with the military, but he's claiming disability for a back injury.
I'm just going to pile on top. If you got a back injury from bench presses, you don't know how to put your back flat on a bench to begin with.
Either way, though, our funding is getting misguided. It does sound like it's overdone,
yeah. I agree. The funding has been misguided for decades upon decades, yeah, and it's not getting apparently any better looking around.
No, it's not getting any better.
It's just getting worse. Anybody who can play a better game. That may have led down
but other
a
than
little
finances,
bit of a political route that I'm not sure when to go.
No, that's fine. I don't do politics. I just, you know, I'm very fond of the military, except for the finances, so.
What else makes you fond of the military? Like, other than
teamwork.
I mean, black and white and training and rules.
Well,
and
speaking of black and white, I mean, there's people from every race there, and we don't care. We're all going to protect each other's back. We don't care. We don't even ask them what country they're from or why they are or the color they are. They're just our teammates. They're our shipmates. They're
we're all wearing Army green or whatever color, yeah.
We're all fighting the same fight, and that's all we care about. We don't care one bit about the other fights behind the scenes. We don't do that. And nobody needs to feel left out there. Nobody needs to feel bullied or picked on. I mean, yes, of course it happens because there's humans involved. Anytime there's humans in an equation. But it doesn't happen nearly to the extent it happens in the civilian world.
The military is known for changing people's racial beliefs. Sometimes in the good way. Like you said, people from all walks of life end up on the same side. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in the, we're sending you to some other world, literally another world, to probably kill a bunch of folks. But then, like, to use, like, the Korean GI example, then we come back with all these blended families all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. And it does happen quite a bit, actually. They bring back spouses from overseas and families. And
it gets the who your person is out of your 20-mile spectrum, which is where most people get to look. Mm-hmm. Like, how far am I willing to drive for a date kind of area, right?
Yeah.
But if you're on the other side of the planet in Thailand, you're not going to meet Susie Q down the street.
Well, and she's probably not your cousin.
Good chance.
Yeah.
Unless you trace far enough back. I mean.
Well, you know, when you get to 69th cousin, I think it's safe.
It's probably far enough away.
Yeah. I think you're safe. But
I mean, I think in most states in America, at least, it's like fourth or fifth. You don't have to get that far away. But,
when my dad's
in America, apparently you can still marry your first cousin in some places.
Arkansas, and when you're 13.
Well, and we make jokes about Arkansas, but yeah, I mean, straight up Arkansas.
Yeah, no, it's a thing. It's totally a thing.
It's nutty.
So. Yeah, my dad was in Vietnam, and he had a girlfriend in the Philippines.
Huh.
He says he wishes he would have brought her home.
That's a familiar blow. Right?
No, not at all. Not at all. He was with my biological mother at the time. I hold no love for her. None whatsoever. So I wish he would have brought her home, too.
Your life would have been very different.
Oh,
you would have been very different.
That's okay. Life happens, you know. I don't get to choose the direction of my path. I just get to enjoy it and try to make wise decisions on the path. You know.
Like, anybody old enough to remember that they need to say try to make wise decisions? Yeah.
Yeah.
that's a thing.
It is.
It is definitely a thing.
It's a thing.
Not always something I've been really great at. Although,
Show me a human that's great at wise decisions.
And if you find that person, they've had a boring life.
Very, very boring life. But I just live my life. I like to put one foot in front of the other. And just, I know everybody says, look towards your future. Look higher. Why? I want to live in the today. Because if I'm looking at the future, I'm not enjoying today. I don't want to do that. I don't have big, huge dreams. I just want to wake up every morning and enjoy the day I woke up in. So.
I agree, but there are things like we were talking about off mic before we started this conversation, like home care and such, that helps tomorrow be a little easier in hopes that there is, in hopes.
I make some of those wise decisions. I have a retirement plan and.
Right.
I do have
dumb
some
Merrill
of those.
Lynch papers that I can't decipher.
I pay a ridiculous amount of money for my life insurance policy.
You're one ahead of me. I don't have one of those.
Military.
Yeah. Okay. Every bit of sense.
I'm in a high-risk career, so it makes sense to have lots.
When job training includes firearms, I think life insurance should be included.
Correct. Yes. So, and I'm in the Navy. Ships sink. It happens. And,
not nearly like it used to.
No, not nearly like it used to, but, you know, I don't know about you, but if I sink in the middle of the ocean, I guarantee you I'm not swimming ashore. I don't have it in me, so.
You're not even going to, like, Kate Winslet onto a piece of wood or something?
No.
Kate Winslet?
It was.
It was one of the Kates,
it was.
Yeah.
Jack, I'll never leave you.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be a thing. I'm going to be like, peace out, everybody.
It's a hard way to go because you have to really surrender at that moment. Like, drowning is a superior point of surrender, apparently.
It is actually my very biggest fear in the world. I am terrified of water. And I joined the Navy.
Is that part of why?
No. It was just... Actually, honestly, what it was is because the Army recruiter was being a peach. I had...
That sounds like a
That's code.
A coded term.
So, yeah, I tried to rejoin the Army. Not soon enough. I should have rejoined the Army as soon as my medical problem was resolved. But I waited because I let other humans get involved in my life that wanted to have an opinion, and I allowed it. But anyway, when I got to the Army recruiter, she wasn't willing to fill out the paperwork for the waiver request for my brain surgery. She said she didn't want to waste her time because she knew it wasn't going to get approved anyway. And she had other people to focus on that were going to be able to, you know, get in.
Well, your brain surgery, I know a tiny bit, but this is due to the severe injury that you went through? Is that what the brain surgery was for? Or
yeah.
Did you have brain surgery prior to that,
no,
too?
No, this was part of that. And so... Okay. The Navy was willing to fill out the paperwork and go through the effort and make, you know, they made all kinds of doctor's appointments for me with neurologists to make sure I was good to go. They sent me to a million different specialists at their expense and on their time. And they got me in. So it's really just thanks to a lazy recruiter that I'm in the Navy, not the Army. But it's okay because my dad
was
in the
Navy. In 1952, they turned my dad away because he had flat feet. Like,
yeah, they...
It's a change of the times.
Well, I mean, they let me out of the Army because I weighed 86 pounds. Apparently, that's not enough. That's why I got medically discharged.
You've got a pretty broad structure for 86 pounds, I gotta say.
Oh, but I don't weigh that anymore.
I'm just saying, but, like, your shoulder span alone at 86 pounds would be a little not enough.
I looked sick. I did. If you look at any of my childhood pictures, I looked sick. But it was nothing I could do about it. I'm a glutton. I eat day and night.
You just had one of those crazy metabolisms.
I did. And I eat and eat and eat. I weigh more right now than I weighed 17 years ago the day I went into labor with my son.
I wore the same size pants that I wore all the way through high school until I turned 31 years old. 29 and 30 inch pants. Which is 1 inch bigger than Prince's waist. I can identify.
Yeah.
Like,
those days started to go downhill at 27. Slowly. But then by 32, it went fast. And now I'm just a normal average person. And I weigh the right weight. And I'm healthy and happy. And I mean, I was healthy and happy then. But 86 pounds, you know, the wind blows. And
I have a couple of friends that are more close to my kids' age that are struggling with the same thing. They're like, yeah. Don't quit telling me I'm skinny. Like, I ate a whole pizza last night. Okay?
I would do that now, but now I pay for it. I didn't pay for it when I was 20.
I'm going to get heartburn medication.
No, no, I actually will gain weight now. And I had a hysterectomy last year, and it's...
That changes your biology a lot.
Yeah, the doctor said that's just a wives' tale.
No.
I gained 15 pounds the first month after the surgery. 15 in 1 month.
Telling me getting a job at a place that makes french fries isn't going to put me 15 pounds more.
In 1 month.
Tell me that's a wives' tale. It's the same kind of thing.
Exactly. Like,
it's not a fucking wives' tale, man.
She said that the coincidence is most people get hysterectomies when they're older, and so it's the age that's the cause. Like, no, I don't disagree with her statement, but 15 pounds in 1 month immediately following the surgery?
Yeah.
That's proof.
Yeah, that's pretty solid.
I've never weighed this much in my entire life. So, I'm comfortable with it, but...
It's a big change. And you're like, I used to be so tiny. And you start
I'm
longing
so
for the
tiny.
Days... You weren't. Yeah, you're still not a very big person by any stretch of the imagination.
So
but I'm going to press pause and grab something to drink. Do you want anything?
Surprise me.
So the next question. Actually, yeah, I'm just... Now that we're back, I may as well ask the next question because it's easier than trying to remember exactly what we were talking about literally about 3 minutes ago. So the next question is, why? Has it gone through who you are, but why?
Why am I who I am?
Yeah.
Because of the bricks that started building the path that I'm on now. I mean, everything in my past created who I am, which is why I am who I am. I had a really rough past. I'm super grateful for it, though, because I don't think I'd be as strong as I am today without it.
Do you want to say any more about that, or do you want to leave it there?
Oh, gosh, that's a whole story.
Well, I think when I invited you to this ordeal, I said that you seem like a person who might have a story or two to tell.
I have a lot of stories. I do. Let's start when I was a small child. That's always the best way to start a story, right? When I was
sort of once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away.
Oh, man, were there unicorns? Okay, that'd be great. But no. Now, I don't know how my dad met my mom. I've never asked him. My dad's a real quiet guy. He doesn't ever talk. So I don't ask him questions because he doesn't invite them.
Product of his time, kind of quiet, I imagine?
Yes. Yeah. Very.
Because men were very stoic and just quiet.
Very. Yeah. He's very quiet. He only speaks when it's necessary. So anyway, I don't ask him questions. I respect that he's quiet. We don't talk. I mean, we have a great relationship, but we don't talk. So anyway, I don't know how he met my biological mother. That was his second wife. I don't know if she was already the addict that she was when he met her or if that came later. Because, again, I've never asked him any questions. But anyway, during her pregnancy and after I was born, she was quite the drinker. I mean, to the point where it just wasn't safe for anybody. And he would come home from work and there'd be empty beer bottles in my crib. And I'd have the same diaper on I had when he left for work. And I'd be covering
quantifiably
bruises.
not a functional level of alcoholism.
Correct. And that's as much of that specific that I
turn the fan up one notch for the dogs. It becomes too much for you.
That's okay. But
you listeners can just hear it because the dogs and the whatever. Go ahead.
Well, no, the dogs need to survive. It's important.
That
but,
one back there who needs to breathe the most. Yeah.
I have 2 half brothers and a half sister. My dad does not have any other children, but she already had children when he met her. He adopted them, so they all have his name. It's my understanding from the little tidbits I pieced together that, you know, that they really enjoyed him and he really enjoyed them. They are quite a bit older than me. The youngest of the three is 16 years older than me.
Okay.
So they're significantly...
I was going to ask by a decade, but no, by a decade and a half.
Yeah, they're significantly older than me. But my dad adopted all three of them. And
so they babysat you. Under duress.
They did. They did. And he said I never had a first word. He said I had a first sentence. I told him, Dad, don't let her hurt me. So he decided it was time to pack up and leave. And keeping in mind, this is the 70s. And
not a place for a single dad.
Not a place for a single dad. Men still to this day don't get custody of their kids. But especially then.
Huge amen, I'm a single dad.
So he kidnapped me. And we went to Idaho.
Straight up kidnap?
Yeah, straight up kidnap me. He packed up my shit in his truck, and we went to Idaho and lived in his truck.
Did he take the other kids, too?
Mm-mm. He didn't.
They were old enough that they could fend for themselves.
They were old enough, and my sister was already doing meth. So, he could only do so much. So he took me to Idaho, and then he got this brilliant idea to marry his first wife again, because she had no kids, she couldn't have kids, and he wanted custody of me, and he figured he was doing me a favor. I needed a mom, she needed a kid.
She seemed like she could do the job, it was all going to come together, and everything's going to be
peachy. So he married her, and my biological mom made no attempt to get custody of me, and in fact, she willingly gave up visitation. And
may I, just because I understand from a personal standpoint, mm-hmm. my son's mother, quote, quote, willingly gave up visitation. But basically, she was just too fucked up to show up.
Yeah, it was
is
like
that. Kind of the thing?
That's exactly what
I mean, it's not
it
like they actually wrote the court a letter and said, no, thank you. They just kind of just kinda. Never
they
showed up for
anything. They eventually did write the court a letter because she struck a deal with my dad. Mm. If she didn't come see me, could she quit paying child support? And so,
sorry, but bitch, you never paid child support in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, do you have any idea how much less student loan debt I would have if you had paid child? Like, you could literally have paid for his first and very expensive year.
Yeah. No,
sorry, personal tirade, but okay, following along.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're a child, you have limited memories. I think I saw her once when I was four. I think. I don't know for sure, but I have a memory of her coming to pick me up with my brothers in the car. So I think she came to see me one time when I was four. We were in Oregon. We were back in Oregon by then. We were living in the Lane County area at that point in time. And then I don't know if it was... that's the last memory I have of seeing her as a child. And then for whatever reason, my dad... and his cousin and his cousin's wife, we all picked up and moved out of state. We moved to Colorado when I was four.
Whereabouts in Colorado? Again, personal interest.
Colorado Springs was the first stop. Okay. And we lived in the back of his truck in a field. And
cool place to do that.
He had a canopy. It was okay. And then my aunt and uncle, who aren't technically my aunt and uncle on paper, they're actually my cousins, but I call them aunt and uncle because they were so old. They had a fifth wheel, and so they'd let me come hang out in there sometimes, but we lived in a field together, all in the same field, and Dad had a job, and then we upgraded to this really super tiny, crappy trailer in a trailer park, a little mobile trailer, haul-behind kind.
A little 70s style, single-wide.
Yep.
Yep. It was rattles when you walk.
Well, it was tiny. I mean, it couldn't have been 15 feet long.
Oh.
It was a pull behind.
Okay.
So, that was an upgrade. And then, my memory fast forwards, we moved to Grand Junction, Colorado.
Yep.
And Dad had a good enough job at that point that we rented a duplex. Junction. And so, I was excited. I had my own bedroom. I had my very own bedroom. It's pretty exciting.
How old were you?
By this point, I was five. Six. Okay. I was six by the time we had the duplex, actually, because I was... when I was five in kindergarten, we still were homeless. But, we had the duplex when I was six.
I'm going to argue the word houseless, not homeless.
True.
Still had a place you went to.
True. I still had
I only argue this from a personal side. Like, I lived in a stupid tent.
Yeah.
Like, I was, by definition, legally homeless, but I had a place that I called home.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a place. We had a field that we were allowed to park in. We weren't squatters, so, yeah. We had a place, but I went to first grade in Grand Junction. And that was the only year we lived there. We moved back to Oregon.
And I went to band camp in Grand Junction.
You know, actually, now that I do the math, I actually think I went to second grade there, too, because my first school... No, I went to second grade in Oregon. And then we moved out to the countryside for third grade, out in the middle of nowhere in the country. And... we rented a house in the country.
What kind of country? Like 20 miles?
Pleasant Hill.
20 miles to town and going to at that time, what, 500 people in the elementary school there?
The most.
Probably easily 2,000
now. No, there were less than 500. Okay. It's still a pretty small community. So, and then Dad, through a VA loan, was able to buy an old broken down shack. And it was rough. But he got it super cheap. And we didn't have water. But we had a roof. And he started slowly, working on that house and building it. And unfortunately, we never had water. It's just something about the land. He tried and tried, and we just couldn't get water. Every well we drilled, the neighbors had the same problem. There was just no water table there. But we lived there for all the way till, I think my dad sold it when I was probably 19. So we actually lived there for a long time. That was great. But during that period of time, I did the typical thing. I got to be preteen and female. You know, we're an emotional mess, you know, female. And I got picked on a lot in school. I got beat up all the time. I got picked on for two reasons. Pleasant Hill's a really rich community. If you're not rich, you're not okay. So I got picked on because I was the poor kid. I always had clothes on from Goodwill, and my parents smoked in the house, so I smelled like smoke, and that's not okay there.
You're currently in a house where I smoke in it. But
I'm okay with that, but, you know, my childhood wasn't okay with that. And so I got picked on a lot, and I was a nerd. I spent all my lunch breaks in the library studying, so I got picked on for that.
Was it just for the studying, or was it partially because it was more comfortable in the library?
It was more comfortable in the library.
Oh, okay, but, yeah, because like I spent many of my lunch breaks in the band room,
but
or
I
the
am
art
a geek.
Room, or whatever, because it was just, A, it was better there, and B, it was a way to pursue my interests.
Yeah, it's a good combination. Yeah. It was a comfort zone, but it was partially because it was a comfort zone, but I also am a hardcore nerd. And it's just like, if it can be learned, I have to learn it. And so I was studying everything, things I would never use, things I never did use. I was studying everything. And so it got to the point as I got older where, you know, all the jocks realized I was smart. Oh, hey, she'll do our homework for us if we pretend to like her.
Shit.
Yeah. So
that's a common pratfall. I don't know if it works everywhere, but it works that way here.
And I was super timid. And so I just did what I was told to do. I didn't know any better. I didn't have a strong bone in my body. And I was scared of everybody and everything, so I just did it. And, of course, that just leads to getting picked on more. You just get, you know, the more
it
you
does.
Can
once
see,
you let them in the door.
Yeah, the more you get picked on, because then the rumor grows around, oh, she's fun. And so then junior high came along, and it got way worse. Because then at that point, you know, you're prepubescent, and the boys start wanting to be boys, and the girls start wanting to be
starting
girls.
To look like girls, nonetheless,
and
yeah.
I never did. I was just this little, gross, tiny string being of a troll. And so I got picked on for that, too. And I just got picked on for everything. And I got picked on for being a prude, because all the other girls, you know, they were wearing makeup and dressing like girls, and
fuck, you can't even afford makeup, so this girl,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. I was just happy if I got a new pair of pants once a year. That,
right.
That was like, that was a big deal to me. I got,
well, my mom went
pants.
Out and got me an OP shirt at the, like, the whatever, the Ross Dress for Less,
yeah,
or whatever at the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
oh,
and
no,
that was
big,
I wore
deal
the
for me.
Shit out of that, like, turquoise shirt, went with my eyes. It was great. It was,
yeah,
the best thing ever.
Oh, I had stuff like that, too. Absolutely. That was, like, the time of my life when I got new stuff, or brand name stuff. Oh, man.
Oh, heaven forbid.
That's a big deal. Yeah. But I was always years behind everybody else by the time I got that new stuff, so I still got picked on. And then I was a band geek, so, you know, I was in bands.
Who'd you play in band?
Trumpet. I still play.
I think we touched on that before,
yeah,
actually.
I still play. Not well. Not well. I played quite well then, because I actually kept up on it. You know, I don't keep up on it anymore. So,
did I say that you asked when you came in here, like, oh, all these instruments I can't play?
Well, I can't play any of these.
There's actually a saxophone, and it's not mine. It's my kid's discarded saxophone because I sold mine because I'm an adult and I had bills and shit. But either way,
I could read that kind of music.
I could play it, and I could probably read music while playing it.
Yeah.
It's the one I'm most proficient at. It's the one I play very least.
Mm.
I play
can't do
all
chords.
These other things.
These all take chords. I can't interpret,
yeah,
chords.
Just, it was just my way of translating music theory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, looking at music theory and going, well, what's this chord? And, oh, on a piano, it's really easy to see, because you can essentially number keys.
Yeah.
And figure it out. Like, you need 8 white keys
to
the next
guesswork.
One. Right. And so, that's where it started. And then it was like, well, fucking guitar is not much different than that, and all I need is 3 fingers. The Ramones made it forever. And, yeah, so all the rest of the instruments. And
well, it's just like learning
just
a language. Once
computer.
You learn one foreign language, it's easier
to develop
to pick up
farther
the rest,
into it,
yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, so all I ever picked up was trumpet. That's it. It's a one and done for me. But, so yeah, that's what I did. Started in junior high and got picked on even more. Got picked on a lot, and I didn't have hardly any friends between them not liking me because I was poor or because I smelled like cigarettes or Or I wasn't, you know, there's just a long list of reasons. I didn't have any real friends.
We gotta be in the 80s right now. People were still smoking cigarettes.
Not the rich people. Or they did it outside. The rich people were smart enough to go outside. My parents didn't go outside. Because
they're, you know, white carpeting and shit in the 80s.
Exactly.
Dumb decorating reasons. Yeah,
stupid reasons. Like, all that stupid crap. For whatever reason, I smelled bad and they didn't. So that made it worse. And, but then, again, this is also when everybody started becoming hormonal. And so I became a bigger target because I was a prude. And they thought that was funny. So they'd run up to me in the hallway and pull my pants down. And, or they'd, like, when nobody's looking, they'd slam me up against the wall and try to kiss me. Or, you know, things like that. And they thought it was funny. And then they'd go brag to everybody. Oh, look what I just did to her. You know?
I was never one of those guys, but I'm going to say sorry for those guys.
Well,
they,
you know,
probably, a couple of them probably would like to. That's not right.
Oh, no. This one's leading to a good story. I promise. I mean, it's an ugly story, but it's a good story. But, so I played volleyball in junior high because I
tried. Short for a volleyball player.
I mean,
my kid's girlfriend goes to Cornell and is a volleyball player.
I was in Girl Scouts too. I did that for 8 years. But
you're right, high for Girl Scouts.
I was trying to make friends all the wrong ways. I joined sports to try to make friends. I joined Girl Scouts because I wanted friends.
I tried that too, yeah.
I still didn't have friends, but I tried all the wrong reasons to have friends. So I didn't do it because I wanted to do sports. I did it because I wanted friends. And my parents were both, you know, working 16-hour days. So if I wanted to do a sport, I had to pay for it myself, and I had to get myself there and back. So it was a struggle, like, because we lived in the country. So I had to walk to school to get to the sports activities. And so by 8th grade, which at the school district I went to was right before high school. And our high school is on the same property as the junior high. But some of the guys that were a year ahead of me...
Is this
were
that one?
No.
Okay.
Pleasant Hill.
I mean, you just brought that up. I was like, that's how they're built, too.
No, Pleasant Hill. They're all on the same property. But the guys that were a year ahead of me, they were all playing football by this time. And so their practice got out about the same time my volleyball practice got out, and I had to walk home. And Pleasant Hill's in the woods. So the football team got it up their pants that they were going to play a funny joke on Eva. And they met me in the woods, the whole entire football team. Fun days. And I went home and told my dad. He sat down, he lit a cigarette, and he looks at me and he says, "What'd you learn from this?" So at that point, I was having an emotional crisis. I'm like, oh my God, my dad doesn't even care. And it's not that he didn't care. It's just that the era he came from, that's how they deal
with
it.
That's how they dealt with it.
And so, but
still,
but
that's not what you want to hear when you come back from that
yeah.
experience.
The interpretation in my head was, oh my gosh, nobody cares. That's when it clicked. Dad, I want my mom. And he looks at me. He's like, what do you mean? I said, who's my mom? I want her phone number. He goes, okay, I'll get it for you. And he got it for me. And he's real laid back. He never talked bad about her. He never said a word about her, period. He just, you know, if he can't say anything nice, don't say anything. So he never said one word about her, good, bad, or indifferent. He got me her phone number. I went to meet her. She, of course, was drunk. And she said, well, I don't know why you looked me up. You can't live here if that's what you're looking for. So that was a great experience. Everything was going bad that year. It was a bad year. It was a really bad year. Nobody cared.
No, Morton Salt, when it rains,
yeah,
it pours.
Yeah, nobody wanted me, nobody cared. That was my interpretation.
Well, and you're right at the age where, of course, you're going to interpret it that way.
Yeah.
That's when we fucking start slicing our wrists and shit.
Yeah, well, thankfully, I'm not that kind of person. But then, of course, all these football players' girlfriends got jealous and started beating me up because I fucked their boyfriends. I'm like, whoa, hello. Two of them actually moved out of the county because they were scared that I was going to press charges.
So there was no legal repercussion.
No, there was.
I mean,
there was,
it's a valid question because of the era.
Like, yeah. Well,
unfortunately,
because my dad
that
didn't
go through.
Yeah, because my dad didn't follow through with it. And so, no, there was nothing. And so, I mean, in a sense, I did learn something from that situation. But you know what? It made me a stronger person. I learned that nobody else is going to come to my rescue, and I need to be that person that stands up for myself because nobody else is going to do it. So that made me an incredibly stronger person at that point in time because, again, due to my interpretation that nobody wanted me and nobody cared, I realized I'm alone. And so I took it and ran with it. And fast forward quite a few years, I was living with a with a short-term boyfriend in an apartment. He brought home a friend from a bar that he'd met, and he was so excited he met this friend, and it was one of the guys from the football team. It was the one, actually, the one that started
it. Like the ringleader guy.
Yeah. And so I took, you know, as soon as he
walked... Did you hit him square in the face, please? Tell me you did.
Not this time.
God, that would have been so good.
I was still pretty weak peas
like,
at this point.
Or stab him in the gut, or, chemically castrate him, or something that he deserved.
No, but I did take my at the time, boyfriend off to the side and told him the shortened version of the story, and I'm like, you get him the fuck out of my house now. He had the kahunas later, this bad guy, he saw me in public, I don't remember when it was or where it was, and he goes, so you want to try it again? I know you liked it. And he said, you can say you didn't like it, but I know you wanted it.
Like, oh, that person's alive.
Oh, still to this day, he talks like that about me, actually, to this day.
That person is allowed to be alive out there.
He is. He's allowed to be alive out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a pretty unique person.
Again, not all humans are human.
Yeah. They're not. But you know what? I don't forgive him, but... I thank him. He made me a stronger person. I grew a set then. I did. I didn't grow a big enough set because I still had other bad choices after him. But nonetheless, I became a significantly stronger person for all of that. And in high school, at that point, I realized nobody cared and nobody wanted me, and I had no friends. So I started making even further bad choices about how to make friends because all the drug users would let me hang out with them.
We were a very accepting group.
Exactly.
Like, we really are.
And so I thought I had friends. So they would let me go hang out at their house and watch all their goings-on. And I never participated, ever. I just sat back and watched.
I hear it's funnier when you watch them from the outside.
It is.
I can't
actually
tell you for certain because, like I said, we.
It's so fascinating. It really is. It's fascinating. I did have another misadventure happen, actually, while I was in high school when I was at one of their houses. I wouldn't say a neighbor, because in the country, they're not neighbors. He was like 3 miles away. But
well, it's a neighbor
he
in
let
the country,
me hang
right?
out at his house all the time when I needed to get away from my life and pretend I had a life. So he'd let me hang out at his place, and his parents were literally never home, ever. Like, he pretty much ran the place himself, so him and all of his little pot-smoking buddies were there all the time, playing guitars and smoking pot. And I went over there one day, and none of his friends were there, but he was home, and he sent me to his neighbor's house to get something for him. And his neighbor had heard the rumors about the football team and thought, oh, this is going to be fun. So he pinned me against the wall.
Did you hit that one?
No, I'm still pretty weak at this point. Young, foolish. I thought that in my unusual perception, I thought I deserved it. I thought nobody cared. I figured, well, guess I'm going to have to take it. This is how life is.
So may I poke at this a little bit? Mm-hmm. I know we're on an emotional edge right here, but may I poke at it a little
bit? Of course you can poke at it.
You have a daughter.
I do. That was actually...
How have you taught her to behave differently?
She is so different from me. I mean, she was born with a set. I taught her to be strong. That's another part of another bad story, though. She's not strong specifically because of me. She's strong because of a bad decision I made. My ex-husband is not her father. And when I married my ex-husband, he was an alcoholic. Bad. I was still young enough and foolish enough to think I could change people. And he... I knew he was an alcoholic. I knew he was a bad person, but I didn't know that he was aggressive. I had no idea. And that came on pretty quickly. Very aggressive. But I never once saw him be aggressive to my child or, you know, in any way interfere with her life. So I figured as long as I just took the burden, she'd be okay. And from my point of view, I thought she was okay. And in a sense, she kind of was. I mean, she got to sit back and learn what not to do, who not to be. Don't be like mom. She'll tell you this to this day. If you interviewed her right now, she'd tell you, I learned not to be like my mom.
My kid, I did one with my kid.
Yeah.
And it's straight up that answer. Like, how'd you become the, you know, college attending, athletic, wonderful, respectful person you are? I did everything my dad, or I didn't do anything my dad did. Like, yeah. I looked at what he did and chose the other way.
Well, in a sense, that means you did
your
job.
And he very well may walk through the door in not too long, actually. He promised he'd text, but
that's
you'll
awesome.
See, like, he's, like,
That salmon t-shirt wearing jock? Yeah.
Oh, well, my kids didn't turn out like that, but she did learn from that experience to be a better person. And what I did not know was that he was molesting her. I had no idea. There were no signs or symptoms. I had no idea. She didn't tell me, actually, until probably 7 years ago. And I asked her, so why didn't you tell me sooner? Why didn't you tell anybody? And she said, what would you have done about it? You didn't do anything about it when he did it to you. Why would you have cared if he did it to me? And she told me that what he would tell her is, I have to do this to you because your mom won't let me do it to her. Because I did eventually, 2 years into that marriage, grow a set and started being really, like, really strong with him. Like, if he would get aggressive, I'd just beat the shit out of him, kick him out. I pushed him out of a second-story window once. Because he was drunk, and I didn't want him in the house hurting.
I don't mean to laugh, but that's awesome.
It was awesome. And one time he was really raging drunk, and he was a big guy. So when he was drunk, he could tear down some, you know. I didn't want him in the house because I didn't want him hurting the kids. Even though he wouldn't intentionally hurt the kids, I didn't want the kids hurt. So he wanted to come in the house. I bit him so hard, my dental imprint is still in his chest.
Nicely.
Yeah, so I grew a set.
Done.
I did. I grew a set. And actually, that's the year I packed up all my shit, took my kids, left, never talked to them again. My son was 1.5 at that time.
Did you leave under the dark of night, kind of like your dad with you?
No, gosh, no. I just walked out. I said, you can have everything. I'm taking the kids. I left him with literally everything. I just took enough clothes for the kids, took their stuff, took my dog, and left.
Good job.
Yeah, so I thank him, actually, for making me 100% strong, because he was the turning point where I was 100% on my own 2 feet. I felt confident that nobody could ever hurt me again. I was never going to let anybody do stuff because I felt like I deserved it. I wasn't going to let people tell me what to do or how I needed to live my life. And life got really good at that point. I mean, it got really good. I was going to college at that point in time. I graduated. With honors, I might add. That's quite the nerd.
In what?
At that time, criminal justice, but then I moved on to psychology.
You're really going to be an officer?
I was at that point. It was a long time ago. That was my initial, you know, quick fix, because I wanted a college degree, and that's what they pushed on me. They really were advertising it, and it was a big thing, and they, you know, like, okay, cool, I'll do this. Well, then I realized that wasn't for me quickly, and I mean, I have served as an officer. I will never do it again, ever again. But
I've known people. It sometimes flows back into your world.
It's just not my thing. There's too many politics.
And there's.
And unlike the military, the rules are meant to be broken.
Are even worse than just normal everyday people. They're literally the dregs of society.
No, I didn't like the coworkers. It wasn't the dregs of society. Yeah. I minded. It was the coworkers, and because unlike the military, the rules were meant to be bent and broken, and favoritism, and this, that, and the other. And there were lots of politics. That's not my thing. So, but I got a lot stronger. I wouldn't put up with people being aggressive anymore. I do, unfortunately, have a real sensitive aversion to alcohol. And I blame it on between my mother and my ex-husband. And I know it's a subconscious level, because I know that the people I associate with now aren't going to hurt me. They're not those kind of people, because I don't choose to hang out with the kind of people that act like that. But when somebody starts to get drunk, it's like a light switch for me. I find them ears
door. Well, and every reason understandable.
Yeah. So
that makes every bit of sense.
Yeah. So I do, like, if my friends are having a good time and they're drinking, I step out. It's just, I can't do it. I can't make myself accept that good people drink too. So
part of the reason is that good people drink, and then they aren't always good people after they've been drinking.
There's also always that.
And
I mean, that's
somebody who drinks regularly said that out loud, so I totally understand that. I like to think that I maintain my good side most of the time, but, you know.
So that's probably my aversion to alcohol, actually, is just I've had enough bad experiences with it that it outweighs the good experiences. I've never been drunk, and I think it's because I'm absolutely terrified I'll be my mom, and I don't want to be her. I don't want to be that person. My dad never drank, so that helped. He didn't drink at all. So it was just never a thing for me to do, because it wasn't part of my life, or at least it wasn't a good part of my life. And my dad is my best friend, and I looked up to him, and he didn't drink, so I didn't need to drink.
Not on the menu.
Yeah, but I also never smoked or did drugs, because I was also equally terrified of becoming an addict of anything.
That's actually... many people who go through recovery cite that. Like, that they knew they had a propensity for addiction in the first place.
Yeah. And I'm so terrified. Anyway.
And so maybe you just, you know, got your 12-step program before you got there.
Yeah, I jumped
the
gun.
And it worked out great, you know, whatever.
It did work out great because I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't smoke, I've never done any of that stuff.
I know very few people that have.
Even when the doctor gives me the painkillers that I'm supposed to take, I don't take them, and then the doctor lectures me because your body can't heal properly if it's in pain. But
there is that.
I have a hard time taking those pills,
too. Eastern medicine, goddamn it. Yeah. So this may be the longest first two questions ever because we're almost 50 minutes in. But let's go to the third question. And you said, hey, I got a story, and so I tried to listen to it.
A lot of stories.
So third question is, what makes you unique?
I'm human. Every human's unique. They're their own... I mean, that's what's special about the human race. We're all unique. What makes me unique? I might be the kindest person I've ever met in my life. I will be kind to the most horrible person on earth. I think I was born onto this earth to be kind. I think that's my purpose. I really do.
How come?
I don't honestly know. It's what makes me feel like I'm doing the right thing. It's what makes me feel good. I wake up every morning thinking, who can I help? What can I do for other people? I mean, I won't literally give somebody the shirt off my back because I kind of like my shirt, but I will give up my whole paycheck to somebody else who needs it. I mean, I'm that kind. And is it always the right answer? No, because there's lots of greedy people out there that take advantage of me. I am everybody's doormat. People know that I'm that kind, and so people call me and ask for money or favors or whatever. I mean, when I left my ex-husband, I gave him everything. And not just so I could get out, because I'm really that kind. I didn't want to leave him with nothing. When I left my last long-term relationship, I gave him everything. Everything. Even the rental. I moved out. I didn't take anything with me except for my clothes and my car. Because I'm just too kind.
I've done that, but I took the newer stereo and the older TV. And one of the sofas. And that was it. That was all. I mean, those are clearly my fucking books. Like,
yeah.
Those are my books, and those are my bookshelves.
No, I didn't. My last relationship ended, quite well. Very friendly terms. Very. I mean, there was no argument over whose was what. I wanted to do the right thing, because I caught him off guard. It was after my brain surgery. That was a changing point in my life, where I realized life is short. And I realized I was in a relationship with somebody that wasn't the missing piece to my puzzle. He was the missing piece to somebody's puzzle, but it wasn't mine. He was a good person. Nothing bad to say, but he didn't fit in my puzzle. We had too much not in common. And so, you know, set somebody free. And I did. It totally caught him off guard. He wasn't expecting it because we were happy. And so I wanted to do the right thing. And
well, that sounds like happy in quotes, however. Like exterior.
Yeah, we weren't happy in the sense that we didn't have much in common at all. So, but we never had an argument in the entire 7 years we lived together.
A lot to be said that in the world today.
We made okay roommates. that's what makes me unique. I am the absolute kindest person I've ever known. I mean, of course, the Dalai Lama must be the kindest person, but he's also the most amazing person.
Read his books. He has moments.
Everybody has moments. He's human. But he knows he's human.
He admits that.
Exactly. He knows his faults.
He may have nursed till he was like 12 or something like that so they could make the most easy path into being a human as possible in the Eastern belief system that he's involved in. But he's human. Like, he may have really tried not to step on any fleas in his entire life, but he's human.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, if I'm walking and I know I stepped on a bug, it just breaks my heart. It does.
The only ones that don't walk around are ant piles, just because, I don't know, you don't live here in Eugene, but in Eugene proper, if the ants aren't holding hands, this fucking town's going to fall down. Like, it just is. And so, I won't smear it, But I will unabashedly step on an ant colony in the sidewalk. But other than that, yeah, if I see you, I'll dodge you. Except mayflies. Don't like mayflies. They creep me the fuck out.
They're beautiful.
Mosquito hawks.
That's not a mayfly. That's a mosquito hawk. Those
thing.
Are different. No,
the same thing.
It's not a mayfly. Mayfly is a little dragon fly.
No, you're thinking dragonfly and damselfly. Dragonfly is a fat-bodied one. Damselfly is a long, skinny tail one that we all call dragonflies.
Oh.
Mayflies are those skeetahawk ones that look like a giant thing with a sticky out. He might bite
I
you.
I just saved
thing.
One out of a spider web yesterday.
No, I just left one in a spider web today.
Oh.
Like, dude, of course, nature, you know, I like spiders better than I like mayflies, so I'm not causing this, but I'm also not preventing this. And, pause and skip to the loo. And again, I think I'm just going to call the break the reason to ask the next question. Because you kind of did some of this already, which is honestly very typical.
Talk too much? Yes, I know.
No. Answer the questions before I ask them.
Oh.
This question is, will you tell me about a defining moment? And we've touched on a handful already.
Oh, gosh, how long is a defining moment? Truly, you know, because with as many defining moments in my life as there were, then there was another one after that. So, time sequentially, the most current defining moment for me was 2009, when I was on my horse and we had an argument with the pavement, and the pavement won. And
so I know some of this story. You want to just splash on what actually happened? Because you kind of broke everything.
I broke everything. I don't have any memory of it, so my version of the story is what's passed on to me from my daughter, because she was riding the horse behind me. She saw it happen.
Unless you were at least riding with somebody.
I was. And the horse, for whatever reason, ran out into the road from the field we were in. He slipped and fell and landed on me.
Horse that you're very used to and knew well? Or
yeah, but there was a long list of bad decisions involved in that ride that day. I was riding without all the proper equipment and stuff like that. But anyway, so I landed on my forehead and completely shattered my entire head and most of my face and my sinuses and my upper jaw. Completely shattered. And I fractured my neck. And the brain swelling was horrible. When the EMTs showed up, I was not... On paper, I was not alive. And they got me to the hospital, and whoever was at the ER at the time called my dad and my boss at the time and told them, you need to come say goodbye. We can't save this one. So, my poor daughter, you know, she's like 13 or something like that at the time. That was just traumatizing for her. But, obviously, I survived. They put me... I was in a coma for 3 days, of my own accord. But then after the following that, they put me in a drug-induced coma because the brain swelling was so bad.
And pain issues, I would imagine, at that point are unmanageable.
I still have no memory. My memory doesn't come till quite a bit later. But after I came out of the coma, apparently I was conscious. I mean, just from the stories I hear. But I have no memory of that. Like, they say that I was talking, sort of. And, but when I woke up, like, my memory of waking up, I was strapped to the bed. I guess they had to strap me to the bed because I kept pulling all of my cords and wires out and being complicated. So, I guess it was bad enough that the IV, when I woke up, my memory of waking up, the IV was, the needle was actually directly in my heart. Like, it wasn't in my arms like your usual...
So, like an adrenaline pump or something?
I didn't ask any questions.
So no, that's the only thing I know, that they stick straight
in my
heart.
There was a lot of morphine.
I am long from a scientist.
There was a lot of morphine involved, so my memories are still foggy even when I did wake up. So, I woke up, even though I supposedly already been awake for weeks, I woke up one day, and I'm just alone in this hospital room, and there's nobody in it, and I'm just like, this is a crappy dream. I'm going back to sleep, because there was a lot of morphine, so there's no pain. And I wake back up, and I'm still in this room, and then this nurse comes in, and I was like, what's going on? And then she tells me what happened. I'm like, no, I feel fine. I gotta go. Like, now. I feel fine.
Well, there was a lot of morphine involved.
Yeah. But then as you know, they called my family to tell them that I was, you know, like two-way conversation at this point. And by then I had revived enough to kind of become more self-aware. And there was still a lot of morphine, so it was still minimal pain. But I looked at my body, and it was like my whole body was literally pitch black. Because every vein in my body broke, and there was blood everywhere. And, I mean, the stories I'm told...
Everything flows to and from your brain, roughly. And so if you bruise your skeletal matter that much, your whole body will bruise.
And my brain was still swollen so much at this point that the fractures weren't healing because my brain had swollen. And my right eye wouldn't stay in because the swelling was so bad behind it. But,
Stays in pleasantly well now, just saying.
It's perfect now. It's just perfect. So anyway, that was the changing point in my life. I realized life was really short, and I needed to start making more immediate decisions. Because at that point in time, I was still thinking long-term, planning for my future. And I wasn't really enjoying the now. I was enjoying the now, but not the way I should have been. And
what do you define as the difference between the two? Like, what's the difference between the way you enjoyed the now then and the way you enjoy the now? Can you, put that into words?
I was spending too much time still trying to please other people. I mean, I was a strong person by this point, so I wasn't hanging out with the wrong people or bad people, but I was still more worried about what made everybody else happy. So the things I was choosing to do, I was doing it to make other people happy. Like, my choice to still, at that point, hadn't rejoined the Army, because nobody else wanted me to. Stuff like that. So I wasn't living in my now, I was living in somebody else's now. And but I was worried about my future. So I was, you know, I was doing a little bit of saving, not much, but a little bit. And I was more worried about what was going to happen in my future and what was my current time frame. I was just worried about what I was making everybody else happy, what they did or didn't want, stuff like that. So
more inner self-focused.
Yeah. So
and make sure that I'm happy and whole.
Exactly. That's the point at which I realized, hey, this is about me. It's not about you. It's about me. The world needs to revolve around me for a few minutes here. And, I mean, I guess from the outside looking in, it could be labeled as narcissistic. But you know what? I'm okay with that. I don't care. I'm not hurting anybody else. I'm not draining anybody else. I'm not taking away from anybody else. Narcissists do exactly that. They drain other people.
I strongly disagree with the villainization of the word selfishness.
Yeah. So I got extremely selfish after that brain injury. I mean, extremely selfish.
Which, generally, by my look, helps everybody around.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. You're not good for other people if you're not good for yourself. And you don't want to bring your problems to other people's lives. So.
And the improvement that I make can help other people. And, like... I made it for myself. I didn't make it for all the other people, but I'm happy to help them and share it.
Yeah.
Free source, as it would be. And I... Again, the villainization of the word selfishness is a detriment to society because people should pay more attention to themselves. And I think that's part of the reason so many people are in therapy is because they're incapable of paying attention to themselves.
Because they're worried about everybody
else.
And
not that it's wrong. Like, if you're struggling, fucking go to therapy. That's cool. Yeah. But I think it's because it's not instilled in us in the first place. And,
be your own person.
Point. Yeah.
I made sure when I raised my daughter to teach her to be her own person, and she is solid. She's awesome. But so I just decided that the world needed to revolve around me and started making my own decisions. I went and bought my own house. I ended my 7-year relationship. I bought a Jeep. I'd always wanted a Jeep.
Broke
I started
down immediately.
Always, it's a Jeep. but I fixed it, and it worked really well. I drove it for a long time.
To give Jeep owners shit. That's
yeah, they're cheap to fix, though. But I just started living my own life, and I loved living my own life. I was happy. I was so much happier, and that's when I started the process of rejoining the military. And so life is good now. I'm my own person. I only care about myself. I mean, not literally, but...
You're kind of the only one you have to feed every day at this point.
Yeah, I'm the center of my universe, so pretty proud of that.
Good place to be.
Yeah, it's a great place to be, and I have a ridiculous amount of animals because they make me happy and I make them happy.
So I know a little bit about your animals. How many animals do you have? Because I got to a stupid count at one point in time myself. A bunch. Mainly because they can live in terrariums that can stack on top of each other and shit.
I've had a lot of them expire recently due to age. Just, you know, they died of a happy old age. But now, currently, I have 3 dogs, 1 cat, 2 parrots. The 1 parrot I've had since I was 16. Blue and Gold Macaw. She's the one I've had since I was 16. I just inherited a little tiny Indian ringneck about a month ago. Because somebody died and
cute birds, but not for me.
It's not for me either. I don't like it, but somebody had to take it.
I mean, birds in general are not for me. I just spent 5 days babysitting birds.
It's a pain in the butt. It's in my next life. I won't.
Spend more time making your food than mine. You got to be shitting me.
Exactly. It's exactly where it's at. I mean, the same with my dogs and everything else. I mean, all my animals at some level are rescues. Like, except for that one parrot, the Blue and Gold Macaw. I went and bought her from the newspaper. Everything else is a rescue of some sort. It was either dumped on me, or it needed a home, or whatever. So, that's not true. I just lied to you. I have a skunk that I intentionally bought. So, I have a skunk and a parrot.
Yes, the listener needs to hear. Like, you have a pet skunk.
I do. I have 2 leopard geckos. I have a lot of goldfish in the pond. I have 2 full-size horses and 1 miniature horse.
So, like, you have the miniature horse just because they're cute, right? Not because they have any use at all, right?
Actually, they have lots of uses. They can pull carts, but I bought
him... So can a pit bull. And more efficiently, frankly.
But when my daughter was young, we went to the fair, and she saw it, and it was cute, and, Mom, I want that pony. And she actually... She played with him a lot, and she showed him, and, I mean, he was a big deal in her life when she was a kid. So... And I don't get rid of animals when they've exceeded their usefulness. They get to expire with me. So
well, a lot of this started with, hey, I want to meet your dumb chickens, and their dumb chickens are useless.
Lay no, I'm not taking them home. I am not taking them
You're
home.
Taking eggs, then.
That's fine. I love eggs. Actually, my skunk eats an egg for breakfast every day. So
cool. Your skunk's got a dozen eggs, came out of the thing today.
That's like, fine. Whatever. We're all about eggs at my house. But, but now that I'm older and wiser, you know.
In quotes, yeah.
As the animals expire, I'm not going to allow people to dump more on me. If somebody asked me, hey, can you help me? This so-and-so needs a home. I'd be like, you know, I can't, but here's some resources.
Yeah, well, and when you do that for long enough, you have those contacts.
Exactly.
Like, those people are in my phone. Like, all right, I'm not down to rescue another dozen spiders. I did it once.
Yeah.
But nobody needs a dozen spiders that may or may not be alive. Like, I rescued a dozen cages. I rescued, like, 8 spiders.
Yeah.
Ew. And, like, you know, but you have those resources. And you just, like, maybe these people would be better, It's curious to me because I have much the same affliction. But I'm like, I don't think I even need another dog because this like, no kids in my house thing.
It's
like,
nice.
The fewer responsibilities I have, the less things I'm cleaning up after, the more opportunities I have to leave town.
Yeah. Like, yeah. When my last pit bull expired, I said no more.
Fund. Yeah, I got a retirement fund. I might be able to travel someday. American dream.
Yeah.
You're 90, you get to go to fucking
dream
England.
Is the key word for me. It's just a dream.
Right. Yeah. All I have to do is keep the house over the head.
Yeah. Be happy, but no, I said no more dogs after the last pit bull expired because I had 2 little dogs. And then there was a homeless veteran sleeping in the car with his pit bull, and she was shivering violently, and I just couldn't stand it. So now I have a red-nosed pit bull because...
She's lovely. I mean, you showed me pictures.
She's gained a lot of weight.
I'm a sucker for
and had a lot of surgery.
Too.
She had
Obviously,
2 months
I'm a sucker
older,
for bully breeds. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because they need somebody to love them. They're the friendliest dogs I've ever owned in my life.
Right? And the most loyal, and they got the biggest smile.
I don't know if
I've never
loyal,
seen a dog smile bigger than a pit bull smile.
Yeah, absolutely. But just she's a sweetheart, smile. And she's the most well-behaved one I have. My friend is temporarily crashing at my house right now, and she has animals, and the pit bull does great with her animals. Like, the ferret was jumping all over her and biting her, and she's just like, hey, this is cool. What is this? I was terrified she was going to use it as a squeaky toy.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, and a ferret can quickly become a squeaky toy. Like, you bite it, it does squeak.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, she's great. She's been great. Thankfully, she's really old, so she'll expire.
The pit bull or the ferret, or both?
The pit bull. The ferret's temporary, because my friend's just crashing my house temporarily, because she's getting a divorce, and she just, she needed She was going to stay at her husband's house while she looked for a rental, but he just got to be too much, so she just crashed
at
my house.
And again, you're, as you said, I think I wrote it down, kind to even the most horrible person on earth.
Yeah, maybe so. So, yeah, I take in all the homeless people. I've had so many semi-homeless people crash on my couch.
That's the only reason I clean my basement. Actually, it's like, I got a friend who needs a place to stay, fine.
Yeah.
I'm getting to the point where, like, you know, 9 months out of the year, you can live in my kid's room.
That's where she's at right now, because my son is off, I shipped him off to trade school. So she's in his room. So that worked out pretty well.
That's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
When it gets nicer, you can offer him something other than the sofa. That's what I always did in the past.
Exactly. Well, the pit bull has claimed the sofa and ruined it, so...
Yeah, well, when, I mean, most of my life it was, you know, punk rockers who hopped trains and things like that. They needed a place to stay. They did not care if it was a pit bull shared sofa. They were more than, it's better than under a bridge, and we got dinner and a shower. And, yeah.
Well, I used to hang out with people like that because I found their lifestyle so fascinating. And
oh, it's much more interesting than fucking schmo on the road.
I would go to these creepy late night parties with them where there were hundreds of people in a house this size and sleep on the floor with them just because I was fascinated. I'm a people watcher, total people watcher. So I'd love to integrate myself into these groups.
Those are,
and experience their world.
Those are some of the best people I've ever met. Most of them. Because they have such varied experiences that they have no opportunity other than identify with you some way.
Yeah.
And they're just super accepting of everyone. As long as you're not just being a cunt, we're fine.
Yeah.
And it's really an amazing thing.
It made me feel like I had friends. I gave up the dream of having friends long ago, and now I'm just happy having a poodle. I don't need friends. Friends are overrated.
So are poodles.
Yeah. Hey,
I just spent 5 days with a 6-month-old poodle. Yeah. He is something else.
Oh, mine weighs 5 pounds, and he's just so cute.
Oh no, this is a whole poodle. Like,
no, mine's
before they made them small and started taking their tails off.
Standard poodle. They call that a standard poodle. Yes.
Well, we call it a poodle because it's easier to explain that on the beach. Like, what is it? It's a poodle. Oh, like a poodle. Before they made them small, it's just a poodle.
Yeah, standard poodle. Actually, a regular poodle is yay big.
Right in between. Standard, yeah, right
poodle.
In between.
Toy poodle, teacup poodle.
Right.
I have a toy poodle. He was abandoned at my
house.
What's
his name?
Poodle. It belonged to one of my dad's sisters, and she frequently abandons things at my house. His name was Raz. I thought that was the stupidest name I'd ever heard of in my life, so I started calling him Poodle, and then it just stuck. And so he knows his name is Poodle. He comes to it.
That's awesome.
It's Poodle.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So that's just it, Poodle.
All right, so last question. What makes you similar to other people?
I bleed red. That was the easiest question you've asked me.
You're not the first person that has answered that way.
Similar to other people. I have the human basic instinct to survive. I think most people have that. And they'll do whatever it takes to survive. So that makes me similar. My goal is to survive the evolutionary scale.
Hmm. Can you further define that for me?
It's a pretty competitive world, and there are a lot of selfish people, and they don't care if you survive, so I need to care if I survive. I like how I'm similar to other Americans. I work a job so I can pay the bills, so I can pay the taxes that our government makes us pay. That makes me similar.
Yeah, the exorbitant amounts of money it costs to have a home and those kind of things, too.
Yeah, I participate in what others consider normal. I don't want to be normal, but I have to participate in what's considered normal because taxes are mandatory. Houses are a necessity. Houses cost money. Things cost money. So in an effort to have the things that are necessary, I have to participate in the normal. Part of me deep down desires to not participate in the normal and just put a backpack on and be free. But
yeah, but we all saw what happened to Christopher McCandless.
Okay, I don't want to be that free. I don't want to be...
Thank you for getting that reference.
Yeah, I don't want to be that free. I don't want to be that wild. I just... I wouldn't mind being less materialistic. I don't actually like to be materialistic. I feel like it was ingrained in me because that's just part of American society. We're a materialistic culture.
It definitely is, yes.
And so I was born into that culture. That's what I was raised in. And so part of me is materialistic. I try not to be. But it's like autopilot. I like that I have a nice house.
I like that I can go just buy a bottle of wine and a pizza or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
but then sometimes I resent myself for having that attitude.
Yeah, once you've eaten the whole pizza and drank the whole bottle of wine.
General, that too.
Maybe
that
not too. The wine in your personal world, but I mean, like,
or you know,
the satiated, the overly
satiated.
Or when
I open National Geographic and see all those starving homeless people. You know, stuff like that. I think this culture is horrible. I mean, and the way our culture came to be is horrible. We were terrorists. And, you know, so one of the questions on my security screening for my security clearance is, do you support terrorism? I mean, of course I say no. But the reality is, of course, all Americans support terrorism. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in America.
The documents that built this country say, support terrorists. Like,
yeah.
If they're in movement for the betterment of the people.
That's the secret right there.
And
that's
a really trick question, just to bring it around and not make it all, like, scary terrorism. But, like, if it's in the better interest of the people, behaving in a way that the government doesn't want is qualifiably terrorism, but you're doing it to make quantifiable and preferably change for the good.
But we're hurting other cultures in the meantime in doing so.
We're hurting our own. That's what civil distress is.
Exactly. We are. So, yeah, I'm similar to other people in that I am fully culturized in the American culture. I try not to be. I resent it.
Yeah, but you were educated that way.
Yeah. I very much resent our history and our past. Very much so. But here I am in the future, and I can't do anything about the past. I just have to try to understand other people and not necessarily accept them, because there are other cultures I don't accept, but it doesn't make me prejudiced. It just means I don't have to accept their culture. I respect them. I intentionally go out of my way to learn about other cultures and other people because it's important. They're important. What made them who they are is important. But I don't necessarily accept their ways of belief, but I respect them.
That's probably a great note to end on. Thank you very much for doing this. I know you kind of came in blind. I hope you had at least a reasonable time.
I did.
Cool.
I did.
Very interesting questions. They make for a good conversation, if nothing else. So
it works out. It works out. I can answer 562,000 more questions another day.
What's fun is I could ask you the same five right now, and the answers will all be different. So.
Well, yeah, because I gave you the Reader's Digest version.
Thank you very much. This has been fun.